Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here. Welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. I'm here with our co-host, Coach Nick. Nick, how are we doing today?
I'm really well, Coach Steve. How are you?
I'm really well. Actually, you know, I just wrapped up a really awesome squat session, right? So just before we recorded this, I was training my squats. And once I finished, I went inside and I was getting ready to have a shower. And man, my body has been through the ringer, right? And you probably relate to this a lot being a powerlifter and lifting heavy yourself. But man, like where that belt goes around your midsection, I'm all bruised, I'm battered, like the skin's dry, like my upper back where the barbell was resting is like all bruised and everything. And I think when you really consider that idea of like maturing into weightlifting or maturing into, you know, strength training, like gone are the days of like muscle soreness from, you know, squats as an example. Like my quads don't get sore, my glutes don't get sore. Like what gets sore is like my body just gets battered and bruised from like other things, right? Have you experienced that before?
Absolutely. Bruises and cuts and other things like that all the time.
Yeah.
Now, where does that bruise come from? What was that? What was this? I'm experimenting with lifting straps at the moment because my weights are getting too heavy for my grip. And the straps cutting into
your wrist.
Oh yeah. And it's like, whoa, what's that?
Yep. Or like if you've ever done things like hip thrusts and you get like bruises on your like front of your hips, right? From where the bar, even though it's padded up, you know, you're still getting those bruises.
Oh yeah. And you feel it the next day and you go, what have I done? So instead of waking up from like a big night out, it's waking up and going, what did I do in my training yesterday? Where I've got, that bruise is from the hip thrusts. Yep.
Like the latest one that's really driving me nuts is things like my deadlifts. So if I wear shorts that are too long, as I go to deadlift, the bar gets kind of caught up in my shorts and it's one more thing to worry about, right? So I've been trying to like get like kind of shorter shorts so that my shorts don't get in the way. But then what happens is the bar just starts scraping against my thigh, right? So not my shin, but my thigh. And then it doesn't like scrape as in bleed. It scrapes and starts to just get like a rash. And it's like, oh, I'm trying to deadlift here. And I'm just getting these like redness in the front of my thighs. And it's like one of those things that you don't think about, but then it just becomes a problem when you're trying to lift.
Oh, totally. I don't know how you can wear shorts on deadlift days. I've never been able to do that. Whenever I've worn shorter leggings or shorts on deadlift days, I've regretted it because I don't want to hold the bar as close. But yeah, you should wear leggings.
I'm going to have to get some leggings. Here's a little bit of a TMI for you. My partner, Laura, she's a Pilates instructor, okay? So she lives in like Lululemon pants. And once upon a time, she was getting rid of some Lululemon pants. And I thought, oh, these look so comfortable. So I put them on, right? And I was like, ooh, maybe I should wear these around more often. But then she told me to take them off. So I might have to go and get myself a pair of Lululemon.
Oh, yeah. They're the best without even being affiliated with them. They are like the second skin, so get yourself some of them and not look back.
But look, Nick, it's an exciting week of the challenge. It always is. We are in week two.
Yeah, week two. Week two of six, which really means like that it is flying by with this six-week challenge. Before we know it, we'll be at the end. It's crazy.
Yeah, and it's good to see that many of us are like settling into that, you know, challenge lifestyle, the challenge routine, like really starting to understand the training programs, the nutrition templates, and, you know, just really getting into the gist of it. And one advice I'd give to everybody listening is, you know, 6 weeks is a very short period of time. And for many of us, you know, we may not see these really large and drastic changes that we want in that 6 week period. And even though we are a week into the challenge, there are some people that come forward and say, wow, you know, I've lost, you know, ridiculous amounts of weight or something. Like they might go, oh, wow, I lost 5 kilos. I've lost 1 kilo and I've lost, you know, 10 kilos, whatever it is. I'm going to invite you to remember that you need to run your own race. It's really difficult to compare yourself to somebody else. And you often don't know what the other person is going through. So, you know, if I was to start, you know, eating really, really poorly, you know, not doing any exercise and, you know, just drinking lots of alcohol as an example, I would probably put on lots of weight really quickly. But then as soon as I cut those items out, I'll probably lose a lot of body weight really quickly. So we do need to remember that just because you're not losing the same weight as somebody else doesn't mean that you've done anything wrong. It's just kind of realigning our expectations about what we can actually do in a week, let alone that 6 week period.
Oh, definitely. And also, another thing is if somebody says, oh, I lost 1.5 kilos in the first 2 days, and now I've put a kilo back on. Like, it's impossible for all of that to be fat either way. So often your body is adjusting from, you know, perhaps you had a bit of junk, other things like that. So it's getting rid of a little bit of inflammation, some water weight, and then you start training and then inflammation from that comes on top of it. So it's a bit of up and down. So don't stress either way at the moment. Just keep track of the data and keep moving on and stay consistent.
Yeah, absolutely. And we know that the biggest things that will impact our acute or short term weight changes will be things like water, firstly, and then gut residue, secondly. So if you're starting a brand new diet, you're drinking lots more water now, you're going to the gym, you've got all these other compounding factors, no wonder your weight's kind of going up and down at the start. You've just kind of thrown a lot of things to it, and it can take, you know, a couple of weeks just to normalize and start seeing trends, which is what we want to see. We don't really care about the single day. Who cares about that? We want to be seeing like the trend of where our weight is changing.
Absolutely. And visually how you feel that you're looking as well. That's another thing.
Now, Nick, on our Facebook group, we have our daily themes, which we've spoken about a couple of times on this podcast here. And we've been getting lots of posts, which is really great to see. Lots on Technique Tuesday, lots of what's your on your plate Wednesday. Many people joining in on self-care Saturday, probably the more important one. But I'm just going to invite everyone, if you'd like to participate in the theme days, all you need to do is use the hashtag so we can see that you're making an entrant for that day. And each time you use that hashtag on that certain day, you get another entrant into the weekly prize draw, which either Nick or I will announce on our weekly live question answer, which is Monday night at 7 p.m. Melbourne time. We'll just draw a name out of the hat and you'll win yourself a sweet little prize, maybe a shaker bottle, some bars, maybe a couple of samples of products, which would be really cool.
And don't forget that that's also your opportunity to log on to your Facebook, have a look at our group and ask any questions to us live and in the moment. So we will answer you right there and then.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite ways to interact with people on the challenge, or just people, you know, who are interested in fitness, because we do have many people in our Facebook group who are currently doing the challenge and then who may be challenge alumni. Maybe they've done the challenge last year, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And I love logging in live and chatting with people live, even though like I'm talking to them via the comment thread. But being able to give someone an answer and more than just what I can type out, you know, something that I could really explain so they get the idea, one of my favorite ways to interact with people. So if you haven't already, make sure you join either Nick or I live at 7 p.m. Melbourne time. And, you know, you can get your answers live from us.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
It is. It is. Now, talking about our Facebook group and more broadly about kind of the questions that we get directed to us and the challenge team, I'm going to invite you to take a moment to think about where you are getting your information from. So somewhere like our Facebook support group, really large support group, many of those questions, Nick and I, you know, we don't live on Facebook. We don't get to answer all those questions. And we will invite you that if you have a question, to reach out to us on the forum. That's where we live on the website. So you log into the Max's Challenge or Maxine's Challenge website, and you can interact with us on the forum. Like Nick and I live on the forum answering any questions that you may have. Remember that the Facebook group is kind of a public group, and you're going to get answers from a range of people. Let that be someone who might have been a previous top 10, someone who may have completed the challenge once before, someone who might be a personal trainer, or someone who's just, you know, a fitness enthusiast. So it's a range of people with a range of different backgrounds, range of different experience levels, providing you with an answer. And many of those are often not the best advice available. So I will invite you to take a moment to think about where you're getting your information and reach out to us on the forum.
That's right. And there are no such thing as silly questions. We encourage you to research and learn as much as you can. So we're always here to answer questions.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's our Facebook group as an example, but that goes out to kind of all kind of communities that we see in the challenge. Let that be, you know, private messages that you might, you know, message an ambassador or something like that, or maybe you message another challenger or something through Instagram or Facebook or whatever. And then similar to like messenger groups, we know that there's many messenger groups out there, and also like mentor groups, which is kind of a new thing as well. So, you know, just be careful about where you're getting your information from. And then also the types of questions that you're asking. So for example, if you're asking a really medical question, probably best to speak with your doctor about that one, not a public forum with a few thousand fitness enthusiasts in it, especially if it's something like, oh, I have high blood pressure. What should I do? So go see a doctor. Or I've got, you know, menopausal or, you know, endometriosis or something like that. You know, it's best to speak with someone above our pay grade, Nick, someone a lot smarter than us, because even you and I won't be able to give advice for those types of conditions.
No way. I'd never want to. No. Very important to send that to the medical people.
Yeah. But look, Nick, let's move on to our non-scale victories for this week.
Okay.
Do you want to start us off?
NSVs. Okay, so we have got the first one, and she'll be really happy to be featured in the NSV because Amy's a really big part of our community and always, you know, helps to make people feel better. So that's part of what she likes to do. So Amy McCartney, this is direct from her mouth, so I may as well just read it out because she'll say it better than I can. Not every day goes to plan. We all have bumps, hurdles, sometimes mountains in our way. Ask yourself, do I really want to give up now? After all, we're past halfway mark of week one. So now we're up to week two. Look how fast that has gone. Are you seeing tiny non-scale victories, perhaps bigger non-scale victories? Well, think how you are going to look in 6 weeks because you didn't give up. 6 weeks is nothing. It's the start of your journey. If you always quit, you'll never see results. Try harder this time. Give it a go. Push past this week and think in 6 weeks' time where you want to be. Have a kick-ass day, everyone. So that's really nice. Just nice and motivating. And just the fact that she can think of the bigger picture. She's been there before. This is not her first challenge. So thank you, Amy. That's really good, really positive and uplifting.
Yeah, I like that. Thanks, Amy. That's a really good message for everybody.
It's good when people do that. Because often you're giving yourself a pep talk and you're also helping people that you don't even know that might be sort of about to give up, and they see that and they go, okay, I'm going to push through. So that's the good thing about the community. So the next one we've got is Margie Tolcher. So she is from The Journals, and Margie says, I cannot believe how much energy I have, even after a busy week of work, cleaning houses and training. Today I went for a walk, didn't expect to complete almost 7K. However, if it wasn't getting dark, I would have continued on. My energy levels are 100% better. So I can't really ask much more. That's pretty good.
That's a win. That's awesome.
I know. And what that also is you know, a non-scale victory of prioritizing yourself. So you're doing your work, the days are long, but still getting those steps in, which is what we highly encourage. So that's a good thing to see, that no matter how busy people are, they're still getting their steps in. Fantastic. And now I've got Nicole Smith from The Journal. So she says, upper body today, diet, tick, non-scale victory, heaps more energy and not craving naughty food. Tummy feels amazing. So it's around about those, you know, day six, sort of a full week nearly of the routine, where you might start to see that those little changes, or actually feel that you're starting to feel better. You're getting more nutrition from your food. You're eating more nutrient-dense food. So your body's actually going to start to enjoy it, as well as you might look better. But inside, you're going to start to go, whoa, wait a minute, what fuel am I putting into my body? Oh, hang on. I'm a bit more like a Ferrari now. I'm not a Lada. Do you know that brand?
A Lada?
Lada Niva. That's what my dad used to have. It's some like really, if anyone's got a Lada, that's good, but not a Ferrari, put it that way.
You're right, a Lada. A bit before my time, Nick.
Yeah, look it up. Yes, Nicole's awesome. Thank you.
Awesome, Nicole. Congratulations. I've got a few non-scale victories. The first one might be actually a little bit more of a scale victory than a non-scale victory, but the first one goes to Elaine Robson, and she writes, scale victory or non-scale victory, because I'm up 1.3 kilograms and shrinking. Might be one of those challenges where I get heavier again. And I really like this, and especially Elaine, and I love the idea of like women's fitness, where we're starting to focus more on, you know, getting stronger, you know, building muscle and being okay with being a little bit heavier, even though she's shrinking. So I love that, Elaine, and it's a great positive message for many of us out there who kind of really focus on the weight on the scales. Even though it's a great bit of information to track and to measure our progress, but it's okay being that little bit heavier, because we know that muscle has a smaller density or smaller size than fat, meaning that a kilo of fat is much bigger than a kilo of muscle. So, you know, you may be getting heavier even though you're shrinking because we're slowly starting to build more muscle and lose body fat. So that's awesome. Elaine, great message for everybody there.
Yeah, it's very important, that message. That's probably one of my favorites so far.
The next one is Erica Elliott, and this is on our Facebook support group. And she goes, it's been only one day, but I'm celebrating. Awesome. I haven't stuck to a single day of a plan in a very long time. And that's awesome, Erica. And, you know, you're right. Many of us, we would commit to a plan and then we might do half a day and then it's out the window, right? And, you know, Nick, even yourself, I know I'm included with that one. I might write myself a training program. I do just one session of it and then I'm like, I don't like this, and I'll write a new one. So it's awesome that, you know, she's stuck to it on day one and then she's planning to commit to it over the next 6 weeks, because the best program out there is the one that you follow. And if you, even if you have the most amazing world-class program in the world, if you don't follow it, what's the point of it? So congratulations, Erica.
So good, Erica. Well done.
And the last one here goes to Mel Cook, another one on our Facebook support group. And she writes, I can now see a significant reduction in bloating after just 1 week. That's all the motivation I need to keep going. And that's beautiful to see, Mel. And, you know, for many of us, bloating is such a subjective experience. You know, there's lots of contributing factors. And sometimes it is just down to the food choices that we have. And it's awesome that she's, you know, improved her food choices to reduce her bloating. And that's the motivation she needs to keep going. So congratulations, Mel.
Congratulations, Mel. I love our NSBs for this week.
Yeah, it's a great group. And look, this is an invitation to everybody listening to this to look for their own non-scale victories. And, you know, for many times we were focusing so much on the scales, and sometimes we miss those non-scale victories. And that could be that you're feeling motivated, maybe you're getting stronger, maybe those pants feel a little bit looser, or you have lots more energy. So post about your non-scale victories on places like our Facebook support group, on Instagram, or in your journals. You know, Nick and I scout all over the place looking for non-scale victories, so you can be featured too. Next up, we've got our coach's corner, Nick. Would you like to take it away for us this week?
Yes, I'm sitting in my coach's corner with a bag of gold. This bag of gold is elusive and you can only have it at a certain time of your life in a certain phase, and it's called the bag of gaining muscle and losing fat at exactly the same time.
Ooh, that's a big bag of gold.
I know. I'm holding on to my bag of gold. So it's put it this way, it is a bag of gold. It's elusive because it's an option that we would love to have, all of us, to just go, okay, I don't want to put my calories too high. I don't want to starve either. Not that, you know, being in a deficit isn't starving, but you don't want to, you know, feel the uncomfortable feeling of being hungry, but you still want to gain that muscle. But of course, you also still want to lose the fat. So choosing that both option is something that pretty much I reckon everyone would have hovered over when they were choosing their program, because it's something that you would probably love to be able to do. Now, if you are brand new, if you're sort of calibrating your calories, if you're new to eating to a plan, chances are if you chose that option, you are going to see a bit of body composition changes, simply because also your body, you may be even cutting down from what calories you were eating, so you could accidentally be in a deficit. But just say you're exactly at maintenance, we call it, so that's not too much for your body, not too little, you're just sitting there, you will probably still see some results. So you may drop some body fat and you may gain some muscle. That is if you are brand new, if you've never lifted a weight before in your life, or if you haven't ever taken training seriously. Something good's going to happen to you. Someone like yourself, Steve, I think you've said this to me before, but I'll use you as an example. It would be a lot harder for you to sit at those calories and to see huge results, because also the amount that you train and what you push in these cycles that you're doing at the moment, you need to fuel yourself, don't you?
Oh, absolutely.
So the thing is, even if you're in a surplus at the moment, it is going to all the right places. It's making you stronger. You are growing muscle, but you have to commit to the process. So someone like yourself, if you were to go to maintenance, I suppose you would sort of flatline a little bit, wouldn't you? You wouldn't have the energy to do what you would like to actually achieve.
No, I'll just be treading water, not doing much.
You would either commit, you would either be in your surplus as you are now, or you would go, okay, I'm going to do, say, a 6-week phase of losing body fat. That's where you're at. So once you get to that advanced level, you sort of have to get off that fence, and you either have to be uncomfortable either way, because it's not super comfortable always eating in a surplus as well, until you get super hungry from your training and then you really enjoy it. And that's that good cycle of appetite. But what, coming back to the initial question, who should do it? Either someone who's been dieting for a long time, so you've been in a deficit for a long time and you want to come back up, but you're not quite ready to go all the way up to a surplus where you're eating more than you burn and you want to just sit there for a while, that's a nice place to live, in the both. And you could do 6 weeks in both, and you might see some slight recomposition changes. It'll depend also on timing of nutrition, things like that. Or I guess somebody who's brand new. But otherwise, I invite people, I'll sound like you, I invite people to get off the fence and commit to 6 weeks of one or 6 weeks of the other. That's my final word on that.
I like that. That's a great tip, because I think I'm going to be talking about something really similar here today. So this is going to be a good one.
So you're going to carry that on to the next bit.
Yeah. So for my coach's corner, I want to talk about nutritional periodization. Okay. Big, long, fancy thing, nutritional periodization. It's this concept that we are trying to organize and structure our nutritional approaches. So we're starting to think of ourselves more like an athlete, right? Someone, let's say, you know, that avatar of a pro bodybuilder, they have a plan over the next, you know, even 5 years, that they're going to spend this amount of time in building phases and this amount of time in weight loss phases and this amount of time in, you know, maintenance phases. And we're slowly making our way through these different phases. Okay. And we're going to talk about how to kind of decide or how long to do each phases and how you can start to make a plan for long-term nutritional success, so you can actually see changes in your physique. Okay. And firstly, let's talk about the concept of fat loss, okay? And I think that's probably the biggest goal for many of us in the challenge. And, the goal is that we're trying to lose fat. And part of that is, you know, we're losing body weight, but we're trying to skew it so that we're trying to lose body fat. Because we don't want to lose muscle. We don't want to lose bone mineral density. We don't want to lose all these good things that we're working hard for. We want to try to get that balanced nicely so that we can stimulate as much fat loss as we can while maintaining as much muscle mass as we can, okay? Now, the first thing I'd say is that when we're choosing a fat loss phase, most of us will have success in about 6 to 12 weeks of a fat loss phase, okay? Anything shorter than that is just too short to see a change, okay? So for some of us on the challenge, you've got this question, Nick. I've had this question as well, where people have asked us, oh, what if I do 3 weeks of, you know, muscle building and 3 weeks of fat loss? And we kind of go, well, it's too short to see a change. Okay. So anything less than 6 weeks is usually too short to notice any significant change in fat loss. Then on the other side, when we kind of go to 12 weeks, if you've been in a true energy deficit for 12 weeks, gosh, you know about it. You feel like dirt. Okay. And the longer that we're in this energy deficit, so when we're kind of teetering more than that 12-week phase, that's when we really start to risk muscle loss. Okay. And that's through a number of factors. One, mainly because our performance decreases and we have less stimulation to maintain our muscle, but then our body kind of slowly adapts to this, energy intake, and then we slowly start to see our muscle mass. And it's actually quite significant after, you know, that 12 weeks or more. Heck, if you've been dieting for like 16 weeks, geez, you're mainly losing muscle and very little fat. Okay. So that's why we kind of like to have maybe that 6 to 12 weeks. Now, you might be scratching your head and going, well, Steve, the challenge used to be 12 weeks and, you know, what the hell's going on? We go, okay, well, in that 12-week period, for many of us, we created the plan so that you are kind of more closer to maintenance in those first like 4 weeks. And then we're only really in that energy deficit for the last maybe 6 to 8 weeks. So it's kind of like a grand design, okay? So that we are trying to maximize the fat loss, maintain the muscle mass so that we can get changes in our physique. So fat loss, 6 to 12 weeks. The rate of fat loss, we want it to be about 0.5 to 1% of our body weight per week. And that's kind of like a rolling average. So it's not wise to compare yourself, you know, Monday week one, Tuesday week one, Wednesday week one. It's better to get like a weekly average. So you weigh yourself a few times that week, find out your weekly average, and then compare that to your weekly average of the next week. Even better, if you can weigh yourself every single day, then you have like really great, you know, 7 bits of information, average it out, and then you can compare average of week one to average of week two.
Yeah, I do that even to this day. It's just a number, and I just jot it down, and then I find that the data is a lot more reliable for me.
Absolutely. Now, if we're losing less than that 0.5%, that can really affect our motivation. Like if you're losing, you know, 100 grams a week, it's not going to really want to keep you excited to keep going. And if we're losing more than that 1% per week, that's a higher chance that we're losing things that aren't fat. And firstly, in that first couple of weeks, mostly it's water that we're losing. And then if it's longer and we're still losing more than that 1%, yeah, high risk that we're losing muscle mass in that phase. And then if we are in a weight loss phase, we don't want to lose more than 10% in one phase of your body weight. So if I'm 100 kilos and I'm trying to diet for 6 weeks and I've lost maybe 12 weeks and I've lost now coming up to 10% of my body weight, that's a really high chance I'm losing more muscle mass and that's negatively affecting my performance or even my general health. So we want to be going for maybe 10% weight loss maximum before we move into that kind of maintenance period before we cycle again into the next phase. Now, talking about muscle gain, similar conversation. We want to be in a phase for maybe like 6 to 18 weeks of real muscle gain. That's in an energy surplus of maybe, you know, that 10 to 20%. We want to be gaining weight at a rate of 0.25 to 0.5% of our body weight. So a little bit of slower rate of muscle gain compared to fat loss, right? Fat loss, 0.5 to 1%. Weight gain or muscle gain, 0.25 to 0.5% of our body weight. Mainly because muscle is actually really hard to kind of put on. And if we're gaining weight at a faster rate, chances are that's a whole lot of body fat. So we don't want to be gaining too much. We are in a little bit of the longer phase, up to 18 weeks. And that's because, again, muscle takes a little bit longer over time. And if you're trying to gain muscle for 2 weeks, you're not going to see much of a change there. Similar, you know, no more than 10% of our body weight we're trying to put on in one phase before we go through a maintenance phase. Once we've either completed like a fat loss phase for 6 to 12 weeks or a muscle gain phase for 6 to 12 weeks, it's best to transition into a maintenance phase, or for many of us, kind of going through like a recovery diet. But then we want to be having, let's say, a 6 week challenge where we're in that maintenance zone. And that's mainly to kind of normalize things like our hunger, our performance, normalize things like our NEAT, our non-exercise activity thermogenesis, and then normalize things like our overall metabolism. So we're trying to have this period of normalization where we're just cruising, we're just chilling. We want to be doing it a minimum of 6 weeks, and then a maximum. Well, we could do it indefinitely, but we need to ask ourselves, well, what are we trying to achieve here? Like, if you are staying at maintenance forever, are you just, you know, treading water? Are you just kind of, you know, just hanging out and doing nothing, which is fine. But if you're doing that for 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, a year, 2 years, it's like, well, are you actually developing your physique any further? Because we can't get a big change when we're just kind of staying on the fence. We need to commit, okay, we're in a weight loss phase or a weight gain phase, okay?
Yeah. So, yeah, maintenance is a really good protective mechanism after you've been dieting for a while. So when I go on stage and stuff, I come back up to maintenance and hang out there just to as you said, to regulate everything. Because if I go into too much of a surplus straight away, my body's just going to go, yes, you're not being chased by a lion anymore and hiding in the woods. So you can grab all that excess fat and chuck it right on every section that you've just lost it from. Very much. Yeah. Very sensitive at the time.
So if we were looking at like a big, like a broader scale, let's say like a year, if you're someone who maybe, you know, more than 30% body fat, you know, you've got quite a lot of weight to lose, you might be like, well, Steve, what am I meant to do? I can only lose 10% of my body weight and then that's it. Well, we go, okay. What would be a better strategy is if you committed to, you know, a fat loss phase for 6, maybe 12 weeks, maybe that means that you do back-to-back challenges at fat loss option. Then after that 12-week period, you may choose to do like a maintenance phase for 6 weeks. So you do one challenge at maintenance for 6 weeks. Then from there, once you've kind of recovered for that 6 week period, then you may choose to go through another fat loss cycle where you do fat loss for another 6, maybe 12 weeks, and then back to a maintenance. So now if you've kind of visualized that graph, we've kind of lost a bit of body fat, we've gone back to maintenance, lost a bit of body fat, and then back to maintenance. And then from there, you may choose, okay, well, now I'm going to choose the next 6 to 18 weeks in a muscle gain phase, back to maintenance, and then the next maybe 6 to 12 weeks in a fat loss phase. So then now we're really committing to, okay, my goal is to build muscle at this stage. I'm okay with a little bit of weight gain. My goal is to lose fat at this stage. I'm okay with a little bit of muscle loss in this stage. So we're balancing this kind of broader periodization of nutrition because, I mean, if you're just following maintenance forever, we're not really getting much change in our body.
Yeah, and I just thought of something as well. I thought of, like, once you get to that more advanced stage, and it might just be time, you become so protective of that muscle that you've spent like hours and hours in the gym building, you know, blood, sweat and tears. So you're less likely to want to just diet it off all the time, you know. So you have to think of ways and strategies to maintain that muscle, even if you are going through a phase where you want to strip a little bit of fat. So you become so protective, don't you? Like you'll be very protective of that muscle that you've earned in your shed.
And, you know, talking about the idea of an advanced person, or once you mature into, you know, body composition or weight changes, man, like the more muscle you have, the easier weight loss is. Yeah. And sometimes it would be better if you went through a muscle building phase, then a weight loss phase, then if you went through weight loss phase. Okay. So if you went through that muscle building phase, you gained, I don't know, half a kilo or a kilo of muscle, then went through a weight loss phase, you may have a better outcome than if you just went through a weight loss and then another weight loss phase.
And also one more thing, the more muscle you've got, sometimes, you know, the leaner you can actually look, because you can get away with a little bit more. You kind of got shape in certain places and it makes you look kind of leaner, even though you might not be. Muscle rocks.
Muscle rocks. Yeah.
It just does. We love it.
Yeah. And a good example of that is, let's see, use something like the love handles as an example, you know, that little bit of like body fat that's around the sides of your stomach. If you had more muscle around, let's say your hips, you had bigger glutes and you had bigger lats, you know, the big V muscle, you could barely see those love handles just because of the muscle shape, right? And even though you might be, you know, you're a guy and you're cruising at like 18% body fat, no one's going to see your love handles because you've got the shape to kind of like drown that out, you know? So you could be a little bit fluffier and still look slim and be happy in clothes and such, and then still enjoy the foods that you want.
That's right. You know, you grow your upper body as a woman. Don't be afraid to do that because it completely balances out your silhouette. It just completely does. But I mean, that's a whole other podcast, you know, growing body parts. But like, yeah, we love muscle. We just love it.
And, you know, a similar conversation is around that idea of food. Like the more muscle you have, the more, you know, energy you need to consume. And sometimes that energy needs to be kind of higher caloric foods. So you could have a big bowl of pasta and, you know, feel good after it and not gain any weight after that. And, you know, you could enjoy that pizza on the weekend. You could have like a glass of, I don't know, Coke if you wanted to, because, you know, it's all under the umbrella of calories. And if you're, you know, 100 kilos and, you know, 10% body fat, you're 90 kilos of muscle mass, gosh, you need a lot of energy to maintain that, which means that you can have a little bit more flexibility to eat what you like. And, you know, for some women out there, as an example, you might be super skinny, very little body muscle mass on you. And for you to lose weight, you would need to have something like, I don't know, 1200 calories. And that's not fun, man. That's not fun at all. But if you were to gain a couple of kilos in muscle mass, then you could be losing weight at, I don't know, 1500 calories. And that means that you might be able to have those extra fun things in your foods. And you may be able to have that, I don't know, peanut butter on toast that you really love, and then still lose weight compared to just, you know, that idea of starving yourself because you need to have much smaller foods. So yes, there's so many benefits to gaining muscle.
And then you can be one of those people that your friends go, what?
Yeah, you eat all that? Yeah.
Yeah. And you can go, yeah. And you have to introduce them to the pot of gold in the corner from the start of this section. Yeah.
Well, look, I think this is a nice segue to our questions segment of our podcast, where we're going to answer a few questions that have come up on places like our forum or the Facebook group or even Instagram. And this first one, Nick, you can answer this one, which is this common question of, are my calories too high? And this is mainly because of this new template that we have where individuals can input their own information, such as their height, their weight, their overall body fat percentage, and then it calculates how many calories they need. And many are starting to scratch their head being like, oh God, is my calories too high for my goal? So Nick, would you like to answer this one?
Yes, I would. Thank you very much. Well, that template, it's so skewed to your actual data that is really... they are your own calories. You can't compare it to anyone else's calories because it's based on so many different variables that it will spit out something that is on paper supposed to work for you. Now, you have to sometimes trust those calories. The only way that you will be able to know is if you actually sit with them for a while and use them, and don't as we would say, don't take the piss out of it, but use it wisely to fuel your training, and you'll actually find that eventually, hopefully, they won't be enough and you'll have to have more, because training stimulates your appetite. All sorts of stuff happens, and this is just an example of someone thinks that their calories are too high. What are your goals as well? So if your goals are to eventually recompose your body, so to have more muscle mass, less fat, you do have to eat. This is one thing that, like, even, you know, women, you might have been able to get away with sort of not eating much in your teens and things like that, 20s, and think that you'd lost weight. But really, unless you were lifting weights, you might have been thin, but you wouldn't have that physique that you're after now, you know, the glutes that you ask how to build, you know, the shoulders, the arms, everything. That comes from actually eating. So I would say, now we don't like saying trust the process. I actually don't like it either. I would say question it. You've questioned it, but now get on with it. So it's okay. You're going to be okay. The other thing that I must say is, where are you going to go? If you're given, just say you're given a certain amount of calories. I'm not going to say calorie numbers because I don't want anyone to worry. You're given your calories for a reason on your template. Just say you're given these calories and you want to go lower and lower and lower. Your body adapts to that. So eventually you could be eating pretty much nothing and your body will just function. Like, you don't want that. Very, very bad. Very, very bad. But you actually need to fuel yourself. So it's okay. I will tell every single person out there that it's okay to eat the calories that you've been given, and you might get a pleasant surprise. The other thing is, not much can happen in 6 weeks to really stuff you around. So take a chance on it, and I bet you'll say, oh, gosh, I wish I'd have figured this out earlier, and you'll be showing us your recomposition photos and things where you go, I can't believe I've eaten this many calories. And I've started to drop body fat and things like that. The other thing is, one more thing. This is something that we haven't really touched on, but I might as well say it. Just say before you were loosely counting your calories, but then now you're actually strategically counting them. You're looking, you're weighing your food. Maybe that before you were eating way more calories than what you're eating now. That's the other thing, because you might go, oh, my gosh, 2,500 calories. Are you kidding me? That's too much. You might have been on 3. You don't know. You know, that's why probably you might have looked to sign up somewhere. So don't forget that, because there was no probably real data before. And if you were tracking, then, you know, I would just suggest to trust it. Your calculator is really good.
Yeah, talking about the calculator, if you're on the nutrition template, you can look at one of the sheets. It's actually a hidden sheet. So if you're on a computer, in the bottom left corner, you can see these like little lines. And if you click that, it'll open up all the sheets, and one of them is calculations. So you can look, we try to be as open source as we can and as clear as day, like the calculations that I use to calculate your information. And I actually used probably the top 10 most common equations that we use in the fitness space. And some of them use things like our body fat. Some of them use things like our height and weight. Some of them use height, weight, age, and gender. You know, lots of different equations. And I used all 10 of them because there's different variables with each one about how accurate they are. And if you look at all 10 of those equations, like, they're all slightly different. And then what I do is I average out all of them. So it's an average of the top 10 most common used equations to predict your energy expenditure, and then multiplied by your activity levels based on if you walk a lot, if you don't walk as much. So it's point, it will be difficult to say that it's the most accurate thing going around, but it's really close to accurate in terms of a prediction about where you are in terms of your energy expenditure. And then you're right, Nick, you know, if you just commit to it and it's just 6 weeks, and even if the calories were out by, I don't know, let's say 100, you're eating 100 more calories every single day. A kilo of body fat is, what is it, like 7,700 calories, depending on where you're looking. So at most, over 6 weeks, you might gain 500 grams of body fat. And if you did that, if you gained 500 grams of body fat and you were trying to go through a weight loss process, you can personally message me and tell me, Steve, you stuffed up, because I will take that. That's if you followed everything to the plan accordingly and you trained and you did your steps.
Oh, and also, you are not allowed to, with that calculator, you are not allowed to lie to it and say that you will do 14,000 steps. Because then it will, the data, if you're lying and going, oh, I sometimes do it, it's it's going to base those calories on what you actually do. So it's actually better that you don't say, all right, calculator, I am going to do 14,000 steps a day. Why don't you say, calculator, I do 7,500. Press that one. That's the other thing. You've got to be accurate and not lie to the calculator.
Yeah. Yeah. No, because, I agree.
Yeah. It's not fair on the calculator. But other than calculator. Yeah. Just don't lie to it because a couple of people have said, oh, I sort of do this, but not every day. And it's like, do you do it every day? That's how you can estimate your level of activity. To be honest, it's sometimes even better to just underestimate it slightly if you're like that and you're not meticulous with it.
The next one question here is about diet breaks. Now, a new feature on our nutrition templates, this challenge is the idea of a diet break. And we are getting questions of, you know, why is it there? Or should I do a diet break? And, you know, what's the point of it? And the gist of it, as a super summary, is that we are starting to see more and more research about this idea of a diet break where we, as the name suggests, have a break from our diet where on a particular day, we would increase our calories back to a maintenance level. We start to see these trends in research and data where we go, okay, if we were to have, let's say, a diet break on a weekend as an example of one day, that we don't see really large changes or significant changes in our weight loss journey. What that means is if we have one group of people that were choosing to have a diet break on the weekend, they bring go back to maintenance. And then we had another group of people that just chose straight dieting. We didn't see a significant difference in weight loss between those two groups, which then means that we could, if we want to, on a particular day, have slightly more calories so that we go back to like a maintenance level and not see a really significant change in our weight loss, okay? And this can be empowering for some people, a little bit scary for others, where we go, okay, well, maybe on the weekend, if I was, going to have a quote-unquote cheat meal or a meal that isn't on plan, okay, you could have slightly more. That's not a free ticket to just eat, you know, what you want because, geez, you could eat 2,000 calories in a single meal if you really wanted to, and I'm sure we've all done it before. But, you know, you could have a couple of hundred extra calories, and that might mean an extra serving of food or maybe an extra meal in the day, or it could be anything, maybe like a small bowl of ice cream or something like that, so that you were to go back to like a maintenance calorie level, and then the next day you go back onto your regular dieting process. So the question is, well, when do we do it? Well, I mean, you could do it any day you like, and I would limit yourself to at most 2 diet breaks in a week. For many of us, you know, 1 is more than enough. And for some of us, you know, once per challenge is more than enough. But, you know, limit yourself to 2 per week of a diet break. And this might be helpful for some of us if we're really feeling that fatigue, because once we get to like week 5, week 6 of the challenge, and you've been dieting for that entire time, that fatigue, that hunger really creeps in. And instead of risking that chance of a binge episode where you, I don't know, eat the whole bag of chips and the box of Tim Tams and the bowl of ice cream and everything while you're watching the latest flick on Netflix, it may be better just to have a diet break. So you go back to normal. You may feel that little bit of an energy boost and you may walk, you know, an extra like 5,000 steps that particular day and then have a PB in your weightlifting session. So you might get all these extra benefits from having slightly more calories. And then you go back to that energy deficit journey in that fat loss phase. So diet breaks can be helpful. And I think probably the most helpful is when life throws curveballs at you. Like if you've got your 2-year-old's birthday coming up or your 40th birthday yourself, or maybe your wedding anniversary or something, and you want to go out for dinner or lunch or something, maybe that particular day you choose to have a diet break, you increase your calories slightly, and then you're back on the horse the next day with your diet. So that's a diet break there.
I love it. Yep. I've used them before and they're very good. They can be very strategic when you're deep in the hunger zone. Yeah.
Deep in the hunger zone.
And also, P.S., I have no troubles. I mean, not that I do this very often or anything like that, but if someone gave me 2,000 calories right this second, I'd be able to eat it straight away, just saying. I don't know how people have troubles eating. I have no troubles.
Yep. I think it's hard when, because there's some foods that you could have 2,000 calories worth of them and you won't even know. And then others you have 500 calories worth and you know about it.
Yeah, true. Like pumpkin.
Pumpkin, yeah. If you had 100 calories of pumpkin, you'd know about it. But if you had 100 calories of a Mars bar, that's, you know, that's what you'd snack on before you decide on what to eat.
You snack before you get, well, your other snack is cooking.
Yeah. You're like cooking up your, I don't know, sauteed vegetables or like, I don't know, a bit of chicken, and you're like munching away on like that Mars bar. Like, yeah, you've just eaten your entire calories of the meal in the snack. Yeah. Anyway.
Yep. Snack.
Snack.
All right.
Next question here is about rest days, Nick, maybe you can answer this one, where some individuals on a 6-week challenge might want to push themselves to the limit. And on our challenges, all of our programs have at least one rest day on them. And some individuals are like Energizer bunnies and they don't want to have that rest day. What would you say to someone if they didn't want to have that rest day and they wanted to train on that rest day?
Okay, so what I would say is we have rest days for a reason. Rest days are where you can actually recover. So sometimes when you're go, 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 you've actually got a lot of adrenaline and cortisol running through your system, and you might not reap the benefits necessarily of the muscle growth that might happen if you actually relax, fuel your body. It's not a license to once again, like, be crazy, but, you know, you still need to go for a walk, get some fresh air, but stop hyping yourself up. Particularly, I find it's a lot of people that are used to HIIT classes and going into the gym and doing class after class or not stopping at all and thinking, almost not doing it even necessarily for the joy of it, but thinking that if they stop, something bad is going to happen. So all I want to do is tell you that if you stop, nothing bad is going to happen. It's only in your head. So the only thing that I will say is if you think that by stopping you'll never start again, then just do practice sitting with that, because at some point life is going to throw you a curveball, something that won't let you train for a couple of days. So you need to be prepared for that. You can't keep going forever and never, ever resting. So I would say train, even though this is something that everyone says and you can roll your eyes at me, but not you, because you won't roll your eyes at me, no way. But people who are listening, they might go, oh, but you can train harder. So you actually want your rest day. Like when we are in the gym, Coach Steve, you and I both have this in common as well. We train the house down. We don't leave any stone unturned unless it's a deload or something like that. But what I'm saying is if the purpose is to train super hard, we need to train pretty hard because we need to, you know, like get past that homeostasis, if you like. You know, we don't want to stay the same. So when you kind of get to the point where you've got to lift really heavy stuff to not stay the same, you want to recover from it. And eventually we'd like everybody to get to that point where they need their recovery, where they actually are looking forward to their rest day. So Shane, my husband, he's got it down pat. He will train and then he will not feel guilty or bad about resting. And he does it quite well. He grows muscle quite well. He's one of those, you know. But I'm just saying, like, we can all learn from that there's times for resting. That's where the muscle grows. So that's, I just want to say it's okay.
I like that. And even if that name shift from like rest day to, I don't know, recovery day or growth day, which some people call it, well, you're right. Like that's when things grow, is when you rest and recover. And you may find that if you did go through that recovery day, when you go and train next, you're able to train harder, which then means that you need another rest day in between. So if you've been cruising at like 50% intensity for a really long time, you may not know what it's like to train at 100% intensity because you're just cruising at 50% all the time. You may benefit from just taking a break or 2 days break and then coming back into the gym, training 100%, then you probably know what's going on.
Yeah, because like some people might go, oh gosh, it's only 6 to 8 reps on my program. I'm just going to smash it out really quickly. And, you know, you can be finished this. You could be finished one of those sessions in 30 minutes or an hour and 30 minutes. You know, it depends on where you're going to take it. You know, where are you going to take those weights? What's your tempo like? What's your technique like? Are you going as deep as you possibly can in that squat, you know, to get the full range of motion, to get to target all those muscles? Because once you do it, like say a full range of motion squat where your hamstrings are touching your calves, every single little fiber needs to recover from that. It just takes a while. None of us are superhuman. So, yeah, I'd say you need them. Yes, you do need them. And I think that a sign of gym maturity is actually taking that rest day.
And just, I was thinking about just before when I was training my squats in between sets, like I was so like gassed from that set. I couldn't sit down. I had to lie down. So I lay down on the floor just to try to recover because of just how much effort it took to do them. So it's okay to rest on your rest day, and it's okay to rest between sets. You know, you're not making it harder by having shorter rest because you're likely just, you know, taking the next set at 50%. It's probably better just to have that couple of minutes rest in between sets. That could be in between circuits, in between training sets, so that you can recover, so that you can go 100% at your next set. That's probably another tip I give you.
I agree. So yes, we need them.
We do. The final question here is, you know, as we come into this kind of spring season in Australia, and maybe we are getting a little bit more sniffles and hay fever and such, questions always come up of, should I train when I'm sick? Okay. I thought I'd just give you my thoughts and advice around training if you are sick. So the first thing I would say is, especially because of this, of our friend COVID that's still around in Australia, if you are feeling sick or under the weather, or maybe those cold-like symptoms or flu-like symptoms, do the right thing. Go get a COVID test. Make sure that you're not spreading COVID. Okay. That's the first thing I'd say. The next thing is, you need to ask yourself, because every person's experience with being sick is very different. You know, you may be sick where you're stuck in bed. You may be sick where you're able to still go outside and go for a walk, or you might be, you know, feeling a little bit under the weather where you could still train and do those things. So it's a very subjective thing. Should you train? If you do choose to train, I would advise that you be respectful of the people around you. If you're going to a commercial gym and you're feeling, you know, a little bit hay fevery, sneezy, those types of things, you're COVID free, but you're still a little bit, you know, a bit of that sick person in the corner. Maybe you want to be respectful of other people by, you know, not sneezing all over the place, not coughing all the things, wiping up after yourself so that we're not, you know, spreading that illness around.
Definitely, especially at this time, it's a bit of a sensitive thing everybody.
It is.
Even if you're COVID free, it's just, you've got to kind of read the room.
You do.
And sniffing around and coughing and sputtering everywhere it's not in fashion right now.
No. I do think that it ultimately comes down to your choice if you're going to train or not that particular day, because training can be on a huge spectrum, right? You can train by going for a walk. You could train by, you know, lifting something heavy, or you can train by just doing some houseworks, like housework around the house, or, you know, lifting the laundry, doing those types of things. Like, that's all elements of training, okay? So no matter how sick you are, you could probably do some sort of training, but it's ultimately your choice if you choose to do some sort of training. Now, for me, anecdote number one, me, when I'm feeling a little bit under the weather, I usually feel better when I do some sort of exercise, let that be going for a light walk or doing some, you know, light stretching or something like that. So for me, when I'm feeling crap, I would do some sort of activity. I feel good. Okay. So that's probably my one tip for you, is that you might feel better after doing some light activity. My second tip is that you're unlikely going to, you know, lift a personal best if you're going to go lift some weights, if you're feeling under the weather. Like if I, you know, have a blocked nose, I can't brace, right? I can't breathe through my nose to brace while I'm lifting. So I no point in me trying to lift heavy. If I've got a headache, that headache is 10 times worse when I'm trying to lift something heavy. So, you know, you might not be able to lift something heavy that particular day. So it would be a self-limiting workout. So you're unlikely going to do anything crazy or bad because you might not be able to lift, you know, as heavy as what you normally could. Okay. I wouldn't go as far to say that there's anything negative to out there if you are sick and you're choosing to train. So, you know, you're not deteriorating your immune system or causing any, like, you know, chronic stress or anything. I wouldn't go as far to say that unless you were, I don't know, on your deathbed, you've got like all the IV drips on you, and then you're trying to go and squat heavy. It's like, okay, maybe that's making it a little bit worse. But, you know, if you're just, you know, the average Joe, you're feeling a little bit under the weather, maybe some hay fever, maybe a little bit of a headache, maybe some itchy eyes, maybe a little bit sniffly nose, you could do some light exercise. You probably feel good afterwards. It would probably be very self-limiting because you won't be able to lift as much or do as much as you normally would.
Good advice.
But look, Nick, let's wrap it up there for episode number 34. Gosh, 34 of the Challenge Weekly Show.
We'll get to 100 soon.
If you like this episode, you could check out 33 other episodes of the Challenge Weekly Show, where we go through a whole range of different topics related to fitness, the challenge, health, and everything in between. If you like this episode in particular, you can let us know. You can share it on Instagram. You can write us a review on iTunes, or just share it with a friend, and maybe you can pass on the good word. And we hope to catch you next week for episode number 35, Nick.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Coach Steve. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.